to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Last week, I returned from a dinosaur dig in Montana, and we did a program about that. It's titled, Montana is Ground Zero for Dating Dinosaurs. What a time we had. There were scientists up there. And I told you just a few veiled, exciting descriptions of a brand new fossil museum that's opening in Glendive, Lord willing, in the spring of 2008. And there's also a fossil dig, an ongoing fossil dig in Glendive, Montana. Well, I'd like to introduce to you the curator of that museum, Otis Klein. Otis, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Thank you, Bob. It's a pleasure to be talking with you today.
Yeah, we had a wonderful time while I was up there. There was a number of guys, including a few scientists there, and brainstorming about how to bring the truth of creation and the Bible and the global flood to an unbelieving world. So, Otis, there's so much to talk about. There's the museum and the dinosaur dig.
Well, I guess probably the thing that we could talk about first would be the museum itself, because that is where we are actually going to be displaying the evidence that points to a young Earth, points to God creating everything after its kind, points to the unique nature of God's creation, the fact that it couldn't have been done by chance. It just all of the features of the dinosaurs, the mammals, the other exhibits that will be shown in the museum just don't allow for anything to happen by chance. It was all done by design in a purposeful way.
Yes, it's so extraordinary. Today, my wife and I, we took our 7-year-old son to an orthodontist. That's a little young for that, and his teeth are all fine. But this guy, very successful practice, he showed us a sophisticated x-ray of Michael's teeth, and we saw the teeth, the adult teeth, that are still in his jaws that are formed, and they're gradually moving to replace the baby teeth. And we asked him, we said, Doctor, could all this happen by chance? Because I told him we were at a dinosaur dig in Montana where they dig up dinosaur teeth, for example, T-Rex teeth. And he said, no, this is a very successful orthodontist in a nice suburb of Denver, Colorado. And he said, no, a lot of years ago, the scientists thought Darwin, the world was simple and this stuff could just evolve. But he said, it's so sophisticated how your teeth are formed and the whole system of replacing baby teeth. He said, there's no way this was all designed.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty exciting.
It is, and I'm pleased to hear that the orthodontist feels that way, because he's echoing what we're also saying too, Bob, and that is that science itself, with the tremendous advances that have occurred in the last 20, 25, 30 years in all the scientific disciplines as well as the scientific equipment, it's just showing that the biggest enemy, and I use that word advisedly when I say enemy, but the biggest problem then that you have with evolution today is in the scientific realm itself. Science is discovering things that are just making evolution as a theory totally untenable.
Now, you guys, I've been to Bozeman, Montana, MSU, Montana State University, and their Museum of the Rockies, which is an extraordinary museum. Will you guys be the second largest museum in Montana?
That is correct. We'll be the largest museum in eastern Montana. And actually, from the standpoint of presenting fossils in the context of biblical creation, we will be the largest museum in the state of Montana to do that, and we'll be the second largest museum in the entire United States to do that as well.
Wow, that is exciting. And you guys are going to have, how many dinosaurs will be in the museum as far as, you know, relatively full-size dinosaur skeletons and all?
Well, I'd have to count them up on the dinosaur aspect of it, Bob, but I do know that we will have over 23 full-size dinosaur and other fossils. And when I say others, I'm referring now to like a full-size mastodon and some of the full-size large fish that are no longer living today, that are extinct, that where we can talk a lot about design as well.
We're speaking with Otis Klein, the curator of the Glendive Dinosaur and Fossil Museum in Glendive, Montana. Otis, on this show, now and then, we've talked about the curator of the Evolutionary Museum in Bozeman, and that's Jack Horner. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he's the personality that Steven Spielberg modeled the scientist in the Jurassic Park movies after. And I've had conversations with Jack Horner, and we've offered their museum a grant, a sizable grant, if they would carbon 14 date the soft tissue T-Rex fossils that they've dug up. And so far they've turned us down. But you let us know when we toured your museum that he came by and he asked you a question about your T-Rex exhibit. Could you what did he ask you about your T-Rex exhibit, and how did you answer him?
Well, I was taking him through the museum and just telling him verbally what exhibits were going to be in what locations. And when I got to where the T-Rex is going to be, which is one of the main exhibits, we have two main exhibits in the museum, mm-hmm. He said to me, well, what are you going to say about the T-Rex? Because I was previously alluding to different aspects of design or different aspects of location or that God had allowed us to discover about different dinosaurs that pointed to a designer and pointed to creation. And so he wanted to know what I was going to say about the T-Rex. And I looked at him, and he and I both sort of had a grin on our faces, because I said, well, Jack, you know what I'm going to say. And he says, well, what is it? And I said, we're going to talk about the report that Dr. Mary Schweitzer and you came out with in April of 2005 that showed that not only was there collagen and hemoglobin and red blood cells in the T-Rex, but there was also soft, elastic tissue, tissue that could be stretched and would snap back. And I said, I have a extremely hard time believing you can have soft, elastic tissue be 65 million years old.
Yeah, and how about the terrain that these dinosaur fossils, and specifically the Wankel T-Rex that they have where they found soft tissue, and this T-Rex that you've just described, where this scientist Mary Schweitzer is doing ongoing research and attempting to pull strands of DNA out of this soft tissue. Is this stuff buried beneath, like, swamps or something? Or what's the rock like that this stuff is typically buried in?
Well, it's what you have in Colorado is rock. What we have up here is what's geologically called the Hell Creek Formation, and it is a sandstone, clay, all sedimentary, of course, but it is very soft.
It's soft, it's dry, it's very porous.
Yeah, we dig dinosaur fossils. Typically, we start out using a screwdriver. I mean, we can go through dirt very easily that way. We don't have to use pneumatic tools.
And so these fossils, in fact, this is somewhat common in Montana, when dinosaur fossils are dug up, the field workers and the paleontologists say that they have a scent, a smell to them, as though they're in a morgue and there's decaying bones.
Yes, that is correct. And it happens here when we're excavating some in the Hell Creek Formation, and I believe even in the literature, when Dr. Schweitzer wrote about this in 2005 and going all the way back into the early 90s, because she's been doing this research for well over 10 years, that was one of the things that was mentioned also. They have noticed the same thing.
And so it's not as though these fossils are somehow hermetically sealed. They're just basically in sandstone, and it's very dry, a very dry climate. And so the thought that they would not dehydrate over 65 million years is ludicrous.
I agree.
And, of course, no evolutionist, atheist in the world, until these finds, would have said, oh, yeah, we're probably going to find soft tissue in a T-Rex someday. Of course they wouldn't say that, because they think it's millions of years old, whereas we, young Earth creationists, we know that God created man and animals, including dinosaurs, back when he made the earth only thousands of years ago, not millions.
That's right.
So that's pretty exciting. So Jack Horner knows that your museum will be capitalizing on the find that these evolutionists have dug up of soft tissue T-Rexes.
That is correct.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
So, and Otis, as you took quite a group we had and toured your museum, there were a number of us from different places around the country,
mm-hmm.
and I had just weeks earlier been at Ken Ham's museum in Kentucky, the creation museum that's put together by Answers in Genesis. And that's awesome, of course, a wonderful Christian, God-honoring museum. But I have to say how we were all thrilled, and we were so impressed by the beauty of your museum, that it is a class act, it honors the Lord, and it's just, it excited us because, you know, Kentucky's pretty far from the western U.S., and I think Glendive from Denver is about an 11-hour drive.
Yes, very close.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I just want to thank you for those comments about the museum, because we've prayed long and hard about what should be displayed and how it was displayed, and we've received tremendous guidance from the Lord, and He's raised up people to help us from all disciplines, and they're helping us, a lot of them, on a volunteer basis, which is a tremendous testimony in of itself, too.
Yeah, and you're located right on the interstate, right on the interstate. And even though you're not open yet, you get a never-ending parade of cars and tourists who stop by and say, we want to see a dinosaur museum.
That's right.
So you're going to have plenty of people to come by, both Christians and unbelievers, when you guys open your doors. This is going to be a great opportunity to bring the gospel of Jesus Christ to our world.
Well, that's why we're here, Bob. And to just put a number on that, I believe that we could have between 50 and 70,000 people a year stop by this museum.
Mm-hmm.
And when you consider the population that we could draw from, that is approximately, if my memory serves me right, a little bit higher percentage than perhaps Answers in Genesis, where they're within two-thirds of the population of the United States.
Mm.
They're south of Cincinnati.
Yeah,
so we're excited about what where the Lord has allowed this to be built.
Yeah, you know, a little bit of competition is not bad, but you guys aren't really even competing.
No.
You're both part of the body of Christ, different members, bringing the truth to our world.
That's right, and we're approaching it a little bit differently. We are truly a dinosaur and fossil museum.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fortunate enough to be back south of Cincinnati at the museum the second weekend that it opened. And I was very impressed with what Answers in Genesis has done back there. And they are truly a creation museum, because they cover all aspects of the creation, biblical history, and sin, where we concentrate primarily on the dinosaurs and the fossils and the evidence, and I mean the preponderance of the evidence that points to a young earth and that man and dinosaurs lived together because they were created together.
A preponderance of the evidence. And we had scientists there in the few days that we were up there with you in Glendive, Montana, and it was so exciting to hear from these guys, their own work, their own interest. And, for example, one gentleman discussed the dinosaur fossils that he has prepared over the years and sent to these high-precision labs to be dated via carbon-14. And, Otis, can you let the audience know, when they date dinosaur fossils, what do they find and why is it interesting?
Well, it's interesting on a couple of counts, I guess, Bob. First off, an evolutionary scientist is not even going to consider dating dinosaur fossils.
Right.
Because he feels that the dinosaur fossils would be at least 65 million years and older in age. And if you're using carbon-14, which you mentioned, the maximum age you could get out of a carbon-14 date, somewhere between about 57,000 and, say, 70 years. Mm. So under 100,000 years. And yet, with dinosaur fossils, with diamonds, with, virtually anything that at one time had an organic nature to it, mm-hmm. we're finding carbon-14. And carbon-14 speaks to a young age, and compared to evolutionary time, an extremely young age.
Yeah, we should expect, if the atheists are right, and the evolutionists are right, and the Earth is billions of years old, then we should expect that everything in the strata layers that are millions of years old should be devoid of carbon-14.
That's correct.
Unless, of course, there's some contamination that the scientists discussed at some length while we're up there in Montana. But there should be no carbon-14 when we date diamonds. I mean, diamonds don't allow groundwater to flow into them. Mm-hmm. They're the hardest substance we have.
Yes.
And fossilized tree sap, which forms amber, there shouldn't be carbon-14 in that stuff when it's supposedly millions and tens of millions of years old. Some diamonds are supposedly hundreds of millions of years old, or even
correct.
A billion years old.
Yeah.
And then where else do we find it? The scientists have reported carbon-14 in oil, in gas, in coal, and it turns out every time we have dated dinosaur bones, it has come back that there has been plenty of carbon-14 in those bones.
And this is one of those examples where that confirms what I said a little bit ago, that the state of science and the advanced nature of science today is creating real problems for the evolutionary community.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, they have to be afraid of this information. Because when this gets out, when the average school child in America knows that there is carbon-14 in everything we date that's supposedly millions of years old, and there should be none, that's going to cause a huge doubt in their minds about whether they're getting the truth from their public schools.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
Yeah, that's exciting. How about the fossil dig at Glendive? That's part of your ministry.
Yes, it is. We have some acreage. It's actually 37 acres of very hilly and ground with a lot of ridges, canyons on it. Actually, if you spread it all out in the flat, it'd be well over 100 acres.
Mm.
And it's the same topography, the same geology that you find at Mikoshik Estate Park, which is right next to Glendive.
Yeah.
It's the same geology you find up around Fort Peck, where the Museum of the Rockies digs their dinosaur bones.
Mm-hmm.
And right here on our own property, we have excavated bones of a T-Rex. We've excavated bones of a duck-bill dinosaur called the Edmontosaurus. We've excavated bones of Triceratops. Mm-hmm. We've excavated teeth from crocodiles. We've excavated fossil ferns, fossil figs, fossil sequoia cones.
Wow.
It's a wide variety of fossils that are on this property. In fact, from the standpoint of dinosaur fossils, we have five different layers of dinosaur fossils that, through erosion, are being exposed on the property.
Mm.
And this is an area, it's right next to the city of Glendive, which is a small community in far eastern Montana. And as part of our ministry, we invite people to come, and we can take them on a dig for a half a day or a dig for a day, or we serve as a resource mm-hmm. to other creation ministries like the Creation Studies Institute, mm-hmm. Creation Research, where we'll have week-long fossil digs.
Mm-hmm.
And so people can actually see the geology that speaks of massive catastrophic movements of water.
Mm.
The land was all laid down by massive catastrophic movements of water, and it's been eroded by the same thing. And then they learn how to find dinosaur fossils and other fossils. And then the very fact, I just mentioned a laundry list of all the different types of fossils we find, the very fact that all of these are found in the same strata indicates they were all put there by water as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it also indicates that, especially when we're talking about some of the plant fossils, that they were put here with the dinosaur fossils a relatively short time ago, because we don't see the problems of decay with the plants. We don't see the problems of them being broken up by being moved for great distances, which also tells us that they grew right in this area here. So it also points out that our climate used to be a lot more temperate, a lot milder, if you will, than it is the harsh climate we have in eastern Montana today.
Mm-hmm. One of our listeners just called in a question,
Sure. And
it's this. Why are there areas where there are so many fossils all together, almost like a fossil graveyard? Why is that? We find that in Colorado. We have a couple places in western Colorado that I've been to where there are literally millions of fossils all jammed together in a small area in certain formations.
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons for it. I'm not sure anybody has come up with exactly one particular reason.
Mm-hmm.
But I would look at, first off, the fact that if the fossil lived and died right where it was found, then chances are it's going to be by itself. It'll be covered up very quickly, and it won't have a lot of other fossils all around it.
Right.
But the fossil graveyards that you're talking about speak to massive catastrophic conditions that would kill these animals,
mm-hmm.
and they also speak to them being placed where they are by water movement.
Right.
And if we look at examples today, for example, you can go over to the Pacific or the Atlantic Ocean, and you'll see kelp beds where kelp has been sort of, by the ocean currents and so on, it's been pushed together in beds, and you can have a massive amount of kelp right here, and you can go a couple hundred yards, and there's none at all.
Right.
And I believe that you could have similar circumstances taking place when dinosaurs have been killed by the water,
mm-hmm.
and their remains are moved around and then covered up down in Dinosaur National Monument in Colorado and Utah area there. You have area where they thought there you had water moving the fossils, and it came to like a dam that had been caused by erosion of mm-hmm. landslide or what have you, and lo and behold, the current slowed down. The dinosaurs that were being carried didn't move anymore. They just settled down to the bottom, and that just continued to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they gradually accumulated that way. So whether it was through currents moving it, whether it's through geological processes that would cause them to pile up. Because of obstructions, it's still being done by water. And I believe we're talking about a catastrophic amount of water like the flood of Noah's Day.
We're speaking with the curator of the Glendive Dinosaur and Fossil Museum, Otis Klein. Otis, years ago, I hosted this show out of Indiana for a couple years, and I used to write. We have a novel called The First 5 Days and a book called The Plot, an overview of the whole Bible. I used to write every day at the Notre Dame Library. And they have a tall library in the middle of their beautiful campus. And outside is a reflecting pool. And I would notice, especially in the fall, it was fascinating how the winds would blow in the water in this reflecting pool. And the twigs, the branches, the leaves, the broken up crumbs of leaves would all sort themselves into same size, sort of same shape pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And it was astounding the sorting that would happen. And, of course, I would reflect on Noah's flood and how that would also happen where we know there were floating log mats that created many of our coal beds. And there most likely was floating, not log mats, but masses of animals.
Carcasses.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also then I recently learned about the possibility of sorting of animals under the ground after they've been deposited and covered up. Because of the way when for a year the earth was covered with water and the tide, you know, we have tides that crash up against the continents. But for that year, that tide would have circled the earth. And when the crest of that wave came over a location, it would press just enormous quantities of water down into the soil that was already deposited. And then when the trough came over, it would pull that water back up. And so actually there's sorting that would happen under the ground even after animals were already deposited.
Yes, and that also could have been amplified by the amount of seismic activity that mm-hmm. occurred during that year.
That's right. Like Linwood,
you had tidal waves that would have right. circled the globe as well.
Exactly. Tidal waves and then liquefaction, what I think you're just alluding to, mm-hmm. when there's earthquake-like activity in the ground could become almost like liquid, like clay.
Yes.
And modern buildings have been known to sink in seconds, and other things will rise up out of the ground. They'll float.
Yes.
So these are some of the forces that could explain the fossil graveyards and other fossil finds that we see out there in the world we live in. So, okay, it's in Glendive, Montana. For people that are not familiar with Montana, that's where? That's in the far eastern?
Yes, we're just 30 miles from North Dakota.
Mm-hmm.
We're on Interstate 94, which is the freeway that takes you from Billings to Minneapolis-St. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in what is geologically called the Hell Creek Formation, which is where you find I call them the glamour dinosaurs, the T-Rexes and the Triceratops.
Right.
And so on.
It's part of the Badlands, right?
That's
like
right.
In South Dakota.
That's right.
It's part of the Badlands. And having been there in the wonderful tours that we got, and what a group of Christian believers that were there, including scientists, it is an awesome sight to behold the fossil dig area, and then the museum itself. So, Otis, how could people find out more? And there may be somebody in the audience who would like to give a donation toward the completion of the museum. The museum is mostly done structurally.
Structurally is just about finished.
Yep.
And some of our first exhibits are due to arrive next month.
Mm.
But as you pointed out at the beginning, we're not ready to open yet.
Right, exactly. So you have about over a $2 million budget.
Yes.
And you've already raised about $1.5 million?
Yeah, it's a $2,250,000 budget, and we've raised just a hair over $1.5 million. So
okay.
we're looking at about $750,000 to go to completely finish everything.
So if people are interested in finding out more, you've got a website. Should we
I
give
do.
Them that?
It's www.creationtruth.org.
creationtruth.org, and you have information there about the fossil dig at Glendive, the museum, and you've got just a complete description about what you guys are doing there.
Yes, we do, and that includes our address, email address, and as everything else you mentioned as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Bob?
So, okay, and then, Otis, thank you so much for joining us. We're absolutely out of time.
Okay.
But we want to update the audience again when the museum opens.
Thank you, Bob. I'll look forward to it.
All right. May God bless you. That was Otis Klein, the president curator of the Glendive Dinosaur and Fossil Museum. Colorado Right to Life's Banquet, September 22nd, and Maranatha Christian Center. What a great school.